The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Menards has what you need to beat the heat. From bottled water to air conditioners and fans, we have everything in stock to keep you from overheating. Patio umbrellas are simple but effective ways to cool down while outside. We also carry a wide assortment of sprinklers, pools, popsicles, and more to help keep the kids cool. Stock up and stay cool with help from Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Don't you put that on Bron. Don't you put that on Bron. Bron been faithful. Bron been faithful for 20 years.
Allegedly, this is right. The talk of Miami. This is not, that's not new. People have been saying that publicly. That's why LeBron had to leave Miami. That's really? Never been confirmed. I don't know.
What's up, everybody? I'm to hear more.
Patrick Cloud.
And this is another episode of Damn Internet. You scary.
Online.
Yeah, man. Shouts out to all the people affected by the fire, man. We want to say that first and foremost. Definitely. LA fires. Our thoughts and prayers are definitely with you. And we're just trying to keep things going to provide some type of escape mentally, and hoping brighten your day just a little bit. We got a fantastic show for you guys today. We got a very special guest, man, amazing comedian and actor. Recently had the pleasure of working on set with this brother on the new season of Churchy. And when I tell you, he absolutely murdered his scene. That episode is going to be one of them ones. Ladies and gentlemen, we got Mr. B. Dot in the building.
Pull up, pull up. What's happening, man?
Thanks for pulling up.
No, appreciate you, man. For sure. We had fun, man. That was one of my goals. I was like, man, I hope that I can have a moment with Tahir where he breaks character and we can just have like a fun vibe and laughing session in this space. Because again, man, I respect what y'all do so much, man. So it was very fun being on set and having that chemistry, dog.
Man, it was fire. It's the crazy thing. And B-Dot, Kev shared this with B-Dot on the day of the shoot, but they were going to cancel his scene because we needed to make up time. So they were going to cancel his scene, but B-Dot's audition was so amazing. They was like, man, let's just push it. Let's pay the fine. Let's just push it. Bro, I tell you, that scene was one of the best scenes that we have shot the whole season. Dog, he had everybody in stitches, dog. It was fantastic, dog. It was one of the best things I ever seen on camera. So,
kudos
again, man. That shit was fantastic.
Appreciate it. And I would have been so damn mad if they had to cut that scene. When I tell you, I spent more to get out there than I got paid for that situation, I would have been hot. So I'm glad, man. It was one of them joints where one of those stores where they say you throw everything in and just type joint, and that's how I just came out swinging, man. I'm glad.
Man, it was fantastic. I can't wait for the people to see it, bro.
It's gonna be amazing.
It's gonna be amazing, dog.
Yeah, for sure.
Amazing. apologize about my energy, guys. It's been a crazy couple of days. A lot of people out here are really going through it. Shouts out to the homie DZ and Serena, man. They are rebuilding currently. They lost everything in the fire. Whole house burned down. I think their GoFundMe may still be active right now. So you can go to DZ's page or Aldell's page, Cheyenne's page, a couple pages that have them. I think Kimi Kev posted it if you want to donate to that. But we definitely are trying to look out for our own, help our own. It's been a crazy time, man. And all the time I've been out here since 2009, it's never been a fire this bad. Like, I've never had to pack up and evacuate the crib. This was one for the books, man. But it's beautiful to see how the city's coming together. It's beautiful to see the firemen out there doing their thing. It's a lot of talk about how the fire, because the prisons have this program where if inmates are, you know, well behaved and volunteer to sign up, they can sign up to be firemen as well. And there's been a lot of talk about people, I think Kim Kardashian and a couple other people saying that the prisoners should get paid more because they get paid between $1 and $2 per day. Yeah. My daughter even came in and was like, yo, this is messed up. And I completely understand that. And I think there is a time and a place to have that conversation. But right now, we definitely want to just focus on the people who are affected by it and keep our thoughts and prayers with them. And we're very thankful to the L.A. Fire Department, as well as the prisoners that are helping and assisting in maintaining and containing these fires.
No, for sure. I think it's going to guarantee a Super Bowl for the Rams. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, man, they beat the snot out today. The Vikings have won 14 games up until last night and got the wheels beat up off of them by the Rams. I'm telling you, man, the Rams is fighting for the people right now.
Yeah.
Based on y'all do prize picks on here? Wherever y'all do, whatever gambling service y'all do, I put me five on plus 100,000 that the Rams win the Super Bowl. I'm telling you, it's going to be the Rams and Kendrick Lamar in New Orleans.
You know what's crazy? What I always think about when there is a tragedy or someone dies, like a of some notoriety, especially celebrities, I be feeling like the award shows be like, "Woof, nigga," because we had nobody to thank. Because they always have that section at the award show where they have the honorary member or they're highlighting somebody. And I feel like this year, all the award shows are gonna be like, man, in these times we want to remember LA and the tragedy that happened. And gonna take 7 minutes out of the program just for that. They do it every time somebody big dies or tragedy.
Grammys up first. I think the Grammys are still deciding they're gonna have it what February 2nd or they're gonna postpone it, right?
Oh yeah, you know that's gonna be on there. You know they're gonna be talking about it for sure.
Yeah, a lot of major artists are like pushing the album, even their albums back. I definitely get like, you know, Rose Bowl performance and stuff like that, but they pushing their whole like rollout out just for this, you know, this tragedy. Yeah. So you can tell, like, even though it's just happening in this city, there's a lot of people going through some stuff. Wait, what's the deal about the East Coast? It's like, I know it's like snowing a lot, but it's more than normal. I haven't been able to read about
it. It's a complete flip on what y'all got going on over there. We ice storming it, but it's not really an ice storm. It's just snow in certain spaces that don't normally have snow. So Atlanta has lost this damn black mind out there. Like they're skiing down. They're having snow parties on the corners. Like Atlanta, we know Atlanta is not really human people down there. They're all aliens. Once you get to Atlanta, You forfeit your human nature and
you turn into like an
ATL for real.
Yeah, and doing the same thing. I saw somebody on a snowboard in St. Louis, and then somebody on skis in Atlanta, and they bringing out the UTVs, the four wheels. They doing all.
What's dope is how talented they are on the skis. If you've ever been skiing, that joint ain't easy. I'm talking about
these brothers. They don't even got instructors.
Just give us the equipment and the elements, and we can survive any damn thing, Jack.
Yeah, man, that's it's crazy, bro. It's crazy to think because I'm doing this other podcast now, and it's a conspiracy based podcast as well. But this one like takes deep dives. We only stay on one topic, and the government has, you know, cloud seeding technology where they can make rain or clear the sky, all that type of stuff. So, you know, the more I get into that other podcast, the more I think about like, man, is this shit connected? Mm. You know, Gavin Newsom has talked many years about LA 2.0 and a lot of places that he's talked about, you know, making these changes and revitalizing the city are the same parts of the city that has been burnt down. He was talking about change the architecture and infrastructure of the Palisades and Altadena and one other place. And it's like, yeah, that's very scary. Convenient.
Right.
That's literally what's still on fire.
Yeah, yeah. It's
and
crazy.
Then they just sprinkled in Studio City and all these other things that was just like, when those started getting fire, I was like, oh shit, is this whole bitch coming down? Naked. But then Sunset, yeah, it's a lot. And it's really, I feel like it's sucks because it's one of those things that like the tragedy is still happening and it's almost like, is it too soon to talk about what's really happening? Because a lot of signs just point to it being a natural fire, and it seems like California catches on on fire a lot. But then you read up about what you're talking about, and it's like, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
Now they're catching a lot of arsons, doing it like unnaturally. It's just, LA would be the place to do that type of shit.
Bro, it's crazy because, and this is just being 100% honest, bro. I did not feel like doing this because you don't realize the toll that it takes on your body. Like, your energy is always scrapped because you wake up every day to the warnings and the Watch Duty app. And shout out to whoever came out with Watch Duty, because that shit has been a lifesaver and a game changer.
What is that? What did you just say?
So, like, Watch Duty is the app that everybody has been watching the fires on, and it updates pretty quickly, mainly in real time, but it lets you know what areas are, if you need to be evacuated, where fires are contained, what fires are not contained, what percentage of containment a fire is having, what areas need to be on high alert, what areas need to keep watch, what areas need to evacuate. It's a very thorough app. So shout out to them, man. Very appreciative of all their efforts of keeping by everyone informed and as safe as possible. But going back to the energy thing, man, like, it's draining, especially for people who have lost everything, but also for those who haven't. Like, there's a certain guilt associated with that because it's still so present in our face every day. So the survivor's remorse is there. The constant awareness and checking the phone, making sure that your area is okay, and then the friends and family checking in on you can get overwhelming because you're trying to pack or you're trying to watch or you're responding to work emails and you're getting all of this. It's a lot, and I found myself questioning, like, damn, should I post a video right now? Is that in bad taste? Does it seem like I'm not taking it seriously? Yeah. It seems like I'm being insensitive to what's going on. Or do I push forward and try to provide some type of relief and escape for people that are dealing with this, to, you know, have something else to look at on that screen? Because it's just, it's everywhere. It's the topic of every conversation as soon as you walk in the room, you know. And again, appreciate how the city's coming together to look out for each other and help with each other. But it's just, it is a bit overwhelming, to say the least.
Definitely.
It's interesting you say that, because my fault, Pat. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just want, because a lot of the things you say mirror grieving,
right?
Like a grieving process. And to that point, I lost my mom last May, right? And we've been having these mom circles. We started mom circles here. So, like, once a month, we all get together. We consider ourselves siblings because we all lost our mom. And we just go through this healing process together. And one thing we brought up that you just brought up was, like, people reaching out to you, right? Like, on their end or on our end, like, we're trying to reach out to our people in LA to say that, you know, we're praying with y'all. Like, we don't know what else to say, but you know what I'm saying? But, like, it could come off as overwhelming, the same as in the process of people just come up and say, I know you lost your mom, man. I'm praying for you. Well, I might not have wanted to talk about losing my mom right now. You dig what I'm saying? And I know you come from a place of love, but it can be so overwhelming and daunting that it's not really as therapeutic and as helpful as you would have thought it was coming from. You dig what I'm saying? So, like, to that point, those of us that are not experiencing it every day, we're not coming out and seeing fires.
Right.
Like, how can we help in that situation? Like, our friends, not necessarily strangers that we don't know, but our friends, because I got a friend that lives out there who owns a Chick-fil-A, right? Yeah. And he was saying how difficult it was not only trying to navigate his family and make sure they were straight, but also his employees and making sure that they were straight in case they had to evacuate and things of that nature. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I've reached out to him a couple times, just let him know, you know, I'm praying and that type deal. But
stuff like that. I completely agree with what you said, because Tony Baker also said the same thing with you know, his son's passing. And his thing was, you know, bring it up if the person who lost someone brings it up. As far as the fires go, I don't have a clear cut way for everyone, because everyone is different. Some people don't mind it; they appreciate it, and I, as well as I do, I appreciate all the lookouts. When I know someone is going through something, whether it's a grief situation with a lost loved one, or it's a tragedy or something like that, what I typically do after I make the first contact is I on the second, third, or whatever one, I follow up with, hey, just want you to know my thoughts and prayers are still with you. You don't have to respond to this. You get a second, you could just like it to let me know that you're still all right. And that just takes some of the pressure off of feeling like you have to respond immediately. Mm-hmm. Or if you forget to, that person's going to feel a type of way. A lot of people, you know, respond with that, even when times where they're, you know, rushing or are in motion, they feel the need to respond so someone won't feel a certain way about them not responding. So it just alleviates some of that pressure off of them to feel like they have to do it in that moment.
Most times we just don't know how to communicate with each other when we grieve, yeah, here, especially as Black men. Like, we just, I hope you're all right, bro. I'm praying for you, dog. Like, that's all we got.
I just posted a video yesterday about this guy. I saw this video online, and he was talking about how, as Black men, we can't be sad because then we looked at as weak. We can't be mad because then we were looked at as the disgruntled, angry Black man. We can't be happy because, you know, then you're at risk of somebody taking your happiness away or somebody thinking that you're gay. You can't be excited because you always have to act like you've been here before. Yeah. You can't, you know what I'm saying, get too pumped up about being at a new place. You can't share your dreams because somebody might take it and, you know, try to. And it's just like this ongoing cycle of limitations that we place on ourselves, and we feel like we can't do things because we aren't safe or it makes us look vulnerable. And I took that video and I remixed it a little bit because I felt everything that he said. Like, I felt exactly where he was coming from. And we usually take that and we embody that because we feel like we have to do that to stay safe and look masculine and be a man. But what that does is it closes you off from effective communication. You don't know how to talk to people other than a surface level. You don't really know how to get deeper than that because you haven't been taught to communicate, embrace those feelings, embrace those fears, embrace that happiness and that joy. And it will hinder you in the long run when it comes to meaningful friendships and relationships. So all I could do was give my personal experience, but I was like, man, this was me for years, even after I was married. And it took therapy and my wife's patience to help me understand that opening up, sharing those feelings, embracing that happiness, being present, being in the moment, being thankful for what I have and excited about the things that are on the way, helped me be a better communicator with her and with my friends and with business parties as well. So I completely understand, especially like for Black men, because we already, I feel like, come from a broken background of not knowing our heritage. And anytime you're in entertainment or you don't have a traditional 9-to-5, it's really hard to build meaningful connections with other Black men because you might not be around them. Right. And you also have to worry about, like, oh, is this person genuinely my friend, or are they trying to manipulate me and use me for my platform or my status or whatever it may be? So it is difficult to build those meaningful friendships and relationships with people because you do have to, you like, really hope that the quality of a character of a person is being presented to you and it's not just a shield of who they really are pretending to be. Damn, we got deep.
I didn't know we were gonna get that deep. I was like, nobody's laughing right now. This is one damn thing funny about this.
This is the scary part. This is the damn internet too scary.
Damn internet deep. Yeah.
I did notice that.
These bitches, right?
Tee me up, twin.
It got real.
Real quick though, I think that what a big thing also is, like what Tahir was talking about like the pressure of content creators, like we don't know when to completely stop. We don't know when to like keep the train going in terms of, like, you know, what people expect out of us. So it's kind of like lose-lose, you know. You might post something and have everybody be like, what are you talking about? The city of LA is on fire. And then you might not post anything and have people like, damn, I was looking forward to, you know, a B-Dot to hear, to like, you know, cheer me up. Yeah. So I wonder if, like, you know, because we experience this literally all the time, you know, with everything that happens. This is a little closer to home because of LA, but anytime something nationally is happening that's crazy, I think for the most part, we talk about it on this show, you know, we talk about it with our friends, and it seems like everybody thinks the same thing. I would be curious to have a conversation with creators on, like, are we just in this for forever, you know, like, yeah. No matter what's happening, is it something that we have to keep going, and because that's why we're here, you know? We're not here to make people laugh when everything's all good, you know? We're also here to make people laugh when people are going through it, and we just have to, like, be mindful of the content itself, you know? Yeah. So we're not doing, like, we should still be posting, but obviously nothing about that could relate or sounds like it's related to the tragedies that's going on. Or is there a time where we're supposed to sort of, like, pull back a little bit and people are just like, not now, we're going through something, you know?
Yeah, I agree, Pat. Like, I wish there was a format for it or something that we could refer to as to, like, what is the proper protocol for, you know, posting and stuff like that. And like, you know, I think, you know, at this point, I've just been doing it kind of, like, you know, as I see fit. And also, you know, like you said, the content, like, you know, nothing that could possibly be related to a fire or anything that could be taken out of context to be taken the situation lightly. The content really makes the difference, as well as the context of the content that you're posting. So I absolutely agree, man.
Like, because I just saw James Davis, he posted something, but it was a set that he did on stage talking about the fires. You dig what I'm saying? So, like, just that. So, like, I personally think, like, whatever your audience likes to, if it's the Pat Geographic and you're talking about animals, talk about that. Drop that. Because somebody needs a relief from scrolling, and seeing the fire. And then you pop up, Pat, and it's like, oh, something different. You know what I'm saying? Against the damn algorithm. You know, like that type of vibe. So I think both. I think we're successful in these spaces because we trust our instinct. Sometimes everything don't work. That's not saying that, but whatever we post, people gravitate to the truthfulness and the honesty and the vulnerability in that. So whatever we're going through, whatever our focus is, if we got to take on the fires, then we drop some content about that. If we it has nothing to do with that, then we stay with that. Like, I think you just stay true to you.
There is definitely a bit of overthinking with it, though, too. Because
everybody. Everybody.
Obviously, I'm not going to post anything that, you know, is negatively talking about what's going on with the fires. But, you know, last Friday, we were supposed to drop episode 1 of Roast Me. And me and Meg were kind of like, I know that's not, it's not that, it's not this about the same thing. But I think dropping something where, you know what I mean? Like, the whole theme of the show is this fire. Yeah. You know, all these sound effects. I was like, okay, I don't know if anyone would take it like that.
It took me a second.
And I don't know if anybody would take it like that, but it was like, this was like Friday, like the day it was bad.
No
and
cooking shows to be aired, no cooking shows, nothing.
Man, look, like, Pat, remember the first season? The first season of Roast Me, this nigga Pat had a rotating spit. So he would have been up there. Like a goddamn 7-Eleven hot dog.
The theme was hell.
Yeah.
So we were just like, man, oh, not now.
Not the best wordplay for right now. Okay, that's good.
That would have been crazy as hell, boy.
definitely some overthinking in it, but I was just like, man, let's just play it safe.
No, that is smart. Because sometimes you throw stuff out there and you don't know that it's going to hit, or you don't know that it's going to lose like that. You dig what I'm saying? Like, Jello Ball had no clue that song was going to get him $13 million. But here we are, guys.
What you mean?
What?
What you mean about the $13 million? I know that song is going crazy right now.
He just signed a deal with Def Jam for $13 million.
For that song?
Yes.
Wait, what song?
I guess we swerved.
Jello Ball just dropped a song that sounds like it's straight out of Nelly's camp.
It got cut out of a Nelly video.
Jello Ball. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. I thought y'all was saying Yellow Ball. I'm like, who the fuck is Jello Ball?
His name is what's his full name?
LiAngelo.
Okay.
Yeah, LiAngelo Ball. He the other Ball brothers. Mellow Ball. And
he's the one that's not in the league, right?
Correct.
Oh, so he could just do this, because it's like, when you first hear it, you like, man, what the hell? This sounds like an old song. And then you're like, this song is actually great. You probably heard it because everybody's using it as their sound.
I think when they first dropped it, because he was in the car with somebody, right? And
that screamer.
Yeah, and I didn't hear that all the way. And I also like in the car while somebody is like recording doesn't sound the best. So I need to go to a DSP and like actually listen to it. Because I keep hearing people and I saw the rappers like oh, let me get the what's that boy?
Boosie and Moneybag.
Yeah, it was like, yo, send the track.
Online. Yeah.
Which is crazy. This is the first time an NBA player has ever had like legit rappers hit them up, like, yo, let me get on the song. Because NBA basketball players and rap usually don't mix
at all.
What's crazy is when the song first dropped, Lil Duval said, watch them try to turn Jello into the next Drake. And here we go.
Oh my God. Before we get into that, because we definitely got to get into the Drake situation, bro. Like, I am
a new one?
Lord, yes. Before we do that, I do want to take a moment real quick because we talked about it. I grazed over real quick that mental fortitude when dealing with this type of tragedy or any type of tragedy or a loss or anything like that. Just want to let you guys know that this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. And BetterHelp is great, man. I can speak to the help that I got from it. I love the convenience of it. I love that everything is done online. You can, you know, take your appointments virtually. You don't have to go to anyone's office, find parking and all of that, man. Listen, it's the top of the year and it already has started off crazy. We like to think that, you know, we get 365 blank pages with every new year, but every year we have something that we take in into the new year with us, whether that's pain or grief or anger from a relationship or a job, whatever that may be, you're still carrying that. And if you haven't put forth the real effort to do some of that weight, to do some of that mental and emotional cleaning, then you're going to carry that through this entire year as well. All right. So it's not just about revisions. It's about revisioning your life and the one that you want, addressing the things that are holding you back. And sometimes that just comes with just talking. A lot of times, for me personally, I would be in a situation where I felt like I thought about a situation enough, put enough effort and time and energy into thinking about it, and I was dealing with it. But talking about it is a completely different thing. And sometimes just saying it verbally gives you a crazy amount of freedom that you didn't even know was possible, but you have to claim those things. You have to talk about it. You have to seek a professional. You know what I'm saying? You get hurt, you ain't just going to go over your homie house and just, you know, hope that things get better. You're going to go to a doctor. So if you're really dealing with something, something's been holding you back, you feel like you can't be your best self, I encourage you guys to check out BetterHelp, fully online, making therapy affordable and convenient, and serving over 5 million people worldwide. And they have access to a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties. And it's super easy to switch therapists for any reason at any time at no extra cost. And that's a big thing because when I first started my journey with therapy, the first one I didn't really mesh with, the second one either. It took three therapists, but in between that time of getting the first and the second, it was weeks. So I'm not even going to get into address the trauma, but I'm also dealing with other new things. So check them out. You can get 10% off your first month. You know, if we're telling you about it, then we got a deal for you. Visit betterhelp.com/DIYS to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/DIYS to get 10% off your first month. We thank BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast. But thank you guys for listening. Da, 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 da.
Shout out to BetterHelp.
I might swerve in the corner. Whoa, whoa. That's
the hey, man. Now back to this Drake thing, bro.
Okay.
This hurts. I'm not gonna hold y'all because I was a big Drake fan. I mean, from
really
what nigga? I was a big Drake fan. Friend of I hosted. I think I told you this story before. I drove to Atlanta from St. Louis to host this concert for Drake. And he was having it at this small venue. And this is when he right after he had just signed, the mixtape is going crazy. He's doing the show in Atlanta. They asked me to host it. I bring on this one group, Hollyweird, from Atlanta. They go up, and then Drake goes up. Drake bring the whole city out. Eric Sermon was there. Prime Mob was there. Lil Scrappy was there. Trey Songz was there. It was crazy, right? The person that booked him, Fatima, and my boy Ian Ford, were telling me how he agreed to do that show before he got signed. He did the show for $500 and a hotel room and a flight out there.
$500?
Nigga.
Drake did?
Nigga. He honored that shit because he agreed to the contract before he had signed with Cash Money and was blowing up, and he had already agreed to it. But bro, Drake, imagine. Imagine that, bro. So
I've been first got out
from the jump, right? From the jump. Every album, even the dance album, I was still putting it on playlists when I go to the gym. I just my upbeat. I mean, I'm even with the battle, like I'm rocking with Kendrick, I'm rocking with Drake, but I'm still a Drake fan, even though Kendrick got that nigga, right? Bro, this last freestyle when he put it out there, and it seemed like he was trying to incriminate LeBron on some other shit, and that's just like, you mad because LeBron was enjoying the song and rapping it? Now you feel like you got to do some shit like that? I just feel like that song, bro.
I think there's two different situations. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I heard about the diss track that Drake put out to LeBron because he was in his feelings because he was dancing to the Kendrick song. And I'm 100% in agreement with Drake. I'm 100% in agreement. I would have put out a diss song on Bron ass too. My feelings was hurt. We're not friends with Kendrick right now. Me and you are best friends. Like, y'all let you walk down the aisle with me to my concerts and everything. You do not get to dance to Kendrick songs in public. You don't get to do it. I would have been in my feelings too. But I think this is damn, what's little buddy name?
Academics.
Yep. Academics is the one that's doing all this damn LeBron had hoes with Academics. Drake and all that kind of foolishness. Man, he doing that goofy ass shit. And it's working too, man. That shit is working. It's fucking working. And I'm going to tell you how it's working. I was on the couch the other night with my wife. My wife ain't never spoke bad about Bron. Never. We love Bron and Savannah. Like, I'm talking about when we see them, we are just so engulfed with their love. And just,
yeah.
And the other night, I said something. I was like, man, he out here trying to lie on Bron and all that. She's awesome. He ain't lying. Bron had them hoes. I said, what?
Okay.
Don't you put that on Bron. Don't you put that on Bron.
It
Don't you put that on Bron. Bron been faithful. Bron been faithful for 20 years.
Allegedly, this is the talk of Miami. This is not, that's not new. People have been saying that publicly. That's why LeBron had to leave Miami. That's never been confirmed. I don't know. But I will say, I agree with you in the fact that Drake's diss was like, I'm disappointed in you, Bron. Like, we were super cool.
Yeah.
I think he heard something about like he was at, somebody was at somebody's family thing or whatever. And then he was just like, man, that's fucked up what you did. Academics was the one that went on stream and was like, you was doing two mans in Canada. You was like that, like Academics be doing some bitch shit, but that that is like, okay, you are a woman.
No, man, I know women stand 10 toes down than that, man. I can't even put that on the agenda of the women. That's just some old corny bitch shit, man. Like,
no, that's basically what I feel like. We ain't never been in an era where you see this many niggas talking about other niggas, you know? Mm-hmm. If it was a podcast that was just like some messy chick, which happens all the time, that was just like, oh yeah, I used to mess with LeBron, blah, 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 blah. That's been happening since the beginning of entertainment, which is basically what I mean. It's like, that is what Academics did. Academics just leaped over 17 codes, not just guy code, just codes. To just like shit on him for no reason based on shit that he heard. And there's just going to be an army of people on the internet who believe him. We don't even know if this is true. But whether it's true or not, it's just like, man, that is the hoest thing I've ever seen from Academics. And that's saying a lot.
I can't even get mad at Academics because that's what he do. I'm done getting mad and being outraged by him. He is a troll. He's made a living and a business off of being a fuck nigga. You know what I mean? Like that's and it's crazy that rappers still fuck with him. Like I'm surprised that Drake fuck with him. That's another thing. Like the more that Drake had to reaching out to him, and I get it, he's an outlet for people to let people know that something's on the way or how he's feeling or where his mind at. But it's like, bro, that was somebody you could have went to Kai. You could have went to anybody other than academics, man. And I just don't sound like academic slander. I don't want this whole section to sound like that, but you made a reputation for your ass. You are a Black Vlad. Like at this point, you're a Black Vlad.
Possibly worse now.
Yeah,
all money ain't good money. It's like,
bro, it's hard for me to turn a blind eye to, like trying to tear down a Black man in a positive situation. Like I still can't fuck with Ye. I can't fuck with Ye, man.
What Ye do?
I ain't fuck with Ye since he said slavery was a choice.
Just the oldest stuff.
I ain't bought a pair of Yeezys. I ain't listening to no new music. I ain't downloading no shit. I hated the Ty Dolla sign saw work with it because I was like, damn, I can't listen to Ty now because if he on the track with this nigga, I don't want to listen to this shit, bro. And I feel like Ye is such a musical genius that we are tied to the old Ye, knowing that we would never get him back. And I don't feel like I don't think he views himself as part of the Black community. I think Kanye is on that I'm OJ type shit. And he only rallies the Black community when he's going at these companies or other race communities, other races and their communities. Then he wants the Black people to get on his side. Like, yeah, man, look how they trying to do a Black king because I know who I am. And I'm like, nah, nigga, don't call us now when you finna get jumped. You shouldn't have been talking shit.
But see, like, I grew up like college dropout, like Kanye fan, like producer on The Rock, rapping on the song Champion. Like, you ain't know our producer could rap like that, Kanye. Mm-hmm. Like, so like, I do know that he has that Black love too. Like, just in the reference of his music back then, talking about dating a Delta and just all these things. Like, I think his situation, like we lost a version of Kanye when he lost his mom.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I really feel like that was something that, like, even what you just talking about mental health, like Black men and mental health, like that is a uphill battle that we're facing. Like, because we always talk to keep that shit to yourself. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can be strong. You can't be sad. Like, men don't be sad. Men don't be scared. And like you were just saying earlier, like we have a myriad of emotions to experience. And Kanye, he does not really, like, he just goes off the deep end. Like, he doesn't have emotional maturity. Like Pat was saying earlier, he doesn't have emotional maturity where he's learned how to. And it's so strange because so many of us that talk for a living, you would think that we would be able to verbalize our emotions a lot better than we do. But we don't. Like, a lot of us, like, hide our real emotions to make others laugh or to create more content or to make a dope-ass album. You know what I'm saying? Like, we never really deal with those things. But like, I like, even with the Kanye saying that that slavery was a choice, like that was some of the most ignorant shit ever. But the reality of that is, I just feel like we all need grace in those spaces. Like, I got a podcast called I Didn't Know, Maybe You Didn't Either, right? And the podcast, and this is not a plug for this, even though it is a cheap plug.
Nah, you plug that shit.
Like, the podcast is about Black history facts that I did not know, and maybe you didn't either. You dig what I'm saying? Like, and I remember last time I was shopping, I'm zooming with the homies, and I was telling them, like, George Washington's teeth and how Christopher Columbus was a super racist. And they were like, you ain't know Christopher Columbus? I knew Christopher Columbus was a bad person, but I didn't know that Christopher Columbus was like Hitler and Stalin. I did not know that. And like, putting it in that perspective for me makes me see the world a little different. So like, we can't assume that all of us are on the same playing field when it comes to learning shit. You dig what I'm saying? So it was ignorant as fuck for Kanye to say that, but we can't expect him to be on the same playing field intellectually that we are in other avenues. So I don't know, just give folks grace in that type of space.
You're right. And I feel like, you know, you're right. Cause grace should be afforded to all of us. We all need that. I feel like that the antics that he was doing, I just ran out of it, bro. Like, it was
Kanye went left, man. Let's be clear. Kanye went left his head.
Like, my thing is, like, he was very expressive and direct about how he felt about Virgil. He was very expressive and direct how he felt about Dame and what's that boy name that Kim Kardashian was dating, the comedian
Pete Davis.
You know, he's talked about his mental health. He's talked about, you know, being on meds and all of that type of stuff. But you still out here like wilding. And I know, like, somebody like, I would imagine somebody like him with that type of personality, that big personality, even the people that are around him that are trying to encourage him to do something different. Like, you can't really tell a man like Kanye what to do, especially when he's aware that he's Kanye. Mm-hmm. And he's leaning into like, bitch, I'm Kanye. It's like, yeah. You know, it's only so much the friends and family close to him can do. So you're right.
And him
I would try to move forward with a little bit more grace.
Yeah, him becoming a billionaire too.
At your own pace, but you know.
Yeah. But you're right.
Kanye's a little different for me because, like, you know, something's wrong with him. You know, like the same way if somebody with special needs went online and said some wild stuff, you probably wouldn't dig into them as hard as, you know. So I think that when you think about, like, man, this nigga is a musical genius. He's on the top of his game with music. That might, you know, he might be like 100 with music and like 20% in other areas with his brain. So yeah. I feel like when he says outlandish stuff, even back to like George Bush don't care about black people, you know,
right?
Even though that was like what a lot of people were thinking at the time.
See, we loved it when he said that type shit.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
but if you think about it as a program for relief, that was a wild thing to do on national TV. You know, it was cool for us because we were like, yeah, hell yeah, stick it to him. But like everything that he's done individually has been wild, you know.
And yeah, the Swift joint, like that was insane.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And there's a part of you that's like, yeah, he's a rapper. He took it away from Taylor Swift, you know.
Yeah.
But that would have been, if it was like Beyonce or something like that, yeah, we would have been outraged. So it's always been these like bursts of like, I think something's wrong with this nigga. So
yeah,
he says this stuff and sometimes he backtraps. He's like, man, I was tripping, you know?
Yeah.
So it's almost like people don't take him as serious because they know something's up.
Yeah. And you know what, Pat, you make a great point. Cause up until this point right now, I had never looked at all of his antics and wild ass moments in totality. Like looking at it as it happened. So you didn't, but if you step back and adjust your gaze, you'd be like, okay, remember when he was on Punk and he was like, fuck it, I'm taking my shit. Remember remember the outburst at concerts and shit like that. Remember the Taylor Swift thing going on stage. This nigga really went on stage and said that shit and then did this. Like,
and then shrugged and gave her shit back and went to his stage.
Bro, look at his documentary back before he was even famous. This nigga was rolling up on Ludacris with a camera team, like, hey, are you done with the studio? I want it. And Ludacris was like, yeah, sure. Like everything he did, like going into studios and playing his beats, and niggas was just like, he was like, I'm a rapper. And they're like, can we just get a beat though? And he's like, nah, I rap. Like it just like kind of like grew
it
with
progressive
money.
Yeah, it was,
and just now we're seeing the more billionaire version of that, where it's
even
just
the
like,
way even the way he dressed at that time, motherfuckers was dressing with big jerseys backwards and Jabo jeans. He came in with polo and backpacks and
collar pop too.
Yeah, collar under the polo, talking about he want to rap in the same room with Jay-Z and nigga, you crazy? Fuck out of here. Fucking nut dog.
Hey, man, I never even thought of it like that, man.
He's been crazy,
and when he
man
hit that Billy status, that was just something completely different. But here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to reach your Billy status, you've been having a little difficulty reaching it. I want to let you know that this episode is also sponsored by Acorns, and Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing your money so it has a chance to grow for you, your kids, and your retirement. And you don't have to be an expert. I know people start talking about stocks and bonds and all of that type of stuff. It can be overwhelming. Well, with Acorns, they will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. You don't have to be rich either, because I know that's the second thing. I don't have $10,000 or $15,000 just to invest in this. You ain't got to worry about that. Acorns lets you invest with the spare money you've got right now. You can even start with as little as $5 or even just spare change. You don't need a ton of time. You can create an Acorns account and just start investing in just 5 minutes. And you don't have to feel like your financial wellness is impossible right? Acorns gives you small, simple steps to get you and your money on track. Basically, Acorns does all the hard parts, all right? So you get to get a chance to watch your money grow. Now, I would like for you guys to check out Acorns. Head to acorns.com/DIYS or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Again, head to acorns.com/DIYS or you can download the Acorns app. This is a paid client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/DIYS. That last part I had to say, they wanted to be sped up. I don't think we're going to be able to speed it up, so y'all just don't have to.
That sounded painful. I was going to ask if you was okay after reading that. That sounded painful as hell on our end. We're like, God damn, spit that shit out to here or to don't. Either to do or to don't. But get that shit to
the done. Words, the words was popping up and then ducking every time I talked to
them. Like I said, did. What?
Hey, live shows are hard.
Child, let me tell you, we might have to just record that audio on that last part. Now send that one in post.
Fix AI.
Post.
That was nuts.
But I listen. Sometimes I just try to power through it. But those the ones when it's the SEC, you got to just excuse me. I'm sorry. Let me say that again.
Verbatim. Damn right. Damn right.
My tongue was getting strangled, nigga.
Oh no, you was hurting. Them D words are taking your ass down too.
Hey man, listen, dog. I'm tired, man. I'm tired, man. I'm just trying to get through the day, and I hate feeling like this. It's just a part of everything that's going on, but I hate feeling like I'm just existing. And this past week, it feels like, because you don't know what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis. So you're just like, all right, let me just get through the fucking day. If I can make it back home and lay down, I've done great. Right. But yeah, man, it's been crazy, dog. Like, I'm just trying to get the energy up at this point.
No, man, like, and honestly, to that point, and I don't know how funny this episode has been versus therapeutic, but nevertheless, yeah. I just want to say, like, to y'all's point, like, even the consistency of this, like, being able to still knock these out, like, there's an audience that needs this shit. You dig what I'm saying? Like, and sadly enough, they don't care what we going through, you know what I'm saying, on a personal basis. You know what I'm saying? Like, y'all have set a stage for yourselves and set a platform for yourselves that people demand a certain level of entertainment from y'all. And, you know, like, it could be way worse than that. It could be motherfuckers not expecting shit from y'all. You dig what I'm saying?
No,
like,
attitude
of gratitude for sure, but like,
Chocolate Sunday, this past Sunday, I was talking to Keon and Ron G about that. And, you know, because it's comics, man, it's really easy to, you know, we say we focus on ourselves, we committed to the grind and all of that. And you coming up with your peers and you're trying to stay focused on the shit that you got going on. But it is impossible to notice when, you know, certain peers excel and get a movie gig or, you know, a star role or multiple commercials and you're like in your lane. And then you mix that with like a tragedy that's going on or the loss of a loved one. Mm-hmm. And as a comic, we still have to go up there and perform for that audience that doesn't know that information and also doesn't care, because they might be going through their own shit and they are here right now just to have their mind released from that shit and be present in this moment. And as a comic and an entertainer, we have to remind ourselves that, like, especially when it comes to like growing and blowing up, everybody can't afford Dave Chappelle tickets in a theater. Everybody can't afford Kevin Hart ticket in the theater, those big ass comedy jams where you got seven headliners and Cat Williams and Moni, all of that. Everybody can't afford that. You know what they can afford? That local comedy club right there, that Laugh Factory, that comedy store, that improv. They can afford those $30, $40 tickets and then another $20 on drinks. So even though you might not be in the big lights and the big stars where you want to be, you're providing a priceless service to people that need you in a way that you can never imagine. And having the ability to go in front of a crowd of strangers and make them forget about what's going on the other side of that door, mm-hmm. and present and laugh with you, something that you came up with in your head or something that you went through that may have been traumatic, but you found a way to flip that shit, right, put it on his ass and make it humorous, not only to you, but to fucking strangers.
Right. It's a
fucking superpower. Yeah. And we have to remind ourselves that we have that power, yeah, and that that power comes with responsibility. And sometimes that, yeah, responsibility is compartmentalizing what's going on in your life, yeah, to still be able to serve the people. We're fucking superheroes, bro. Right. And when you remind yourself of that, you feel like you gain some of your power back. It's energizing for me to remind myself that, to right, even say it verbally, to share it with another comic and then have their eyes light up, to realize like you're doing more than just going up there and bullshitting for 15, 20 minutes. Right. And sometimes comics need to be reminded that because they've been going up there bullshitting for 15 minutes. Sometimes you need to remind it like, nigga, you have a responsibility if you're gonna call yourself a comedian to go up there and do your fucking best because people are dependent on you.
Fact.
So, off my soapbox, that's it. That's all I have right now. B-Dot, before we get out of here, man, give us one of these amazing facts that you just found out.
You know what?
Could you give us your top three if you have it? Because that would be great.
Okay, top three. One would be the one that started my first season was that they used to use black babies as gator bait. Y'all knew that one already, correct?
Isn't that the one that had them that old racist art style? And that's how they showed how they did it, like the pickaninny type of art.
I have no clue what the fuck you're talking about, Pat.
It's like that old racist art style where they showed like the little babies flying into the crocodile.
Alligators' mouths and stuff like that. Possibly, yeah. Like it's a bunch of them. Yes. But to that point, they would, gator skin and stuff was big business in those enslavement periods. So they would use little brown babies. They would throw them in the water. The babies would be fighting for their lives. The gators would come up to eat the babies. They would catch the gators and they would make the clothing and
That's so unnecessarily racist. They could have used anything bait.
Bro,
they went out of their way like black babies. They could have used the chicken. They could have used anything. They could have used a fish. Gators aren't racist. Why? That's so random.
No, we only like chocolate dip babies. If you ain't got nothing there, we ain't covered
the
up.
Brown like ones. The brown ones only.
Wow.
That's
a real thing. So like I was having stories like that for season one, but it was a lot of them like that, like buck breaking. Buck breaking is when they would punish the slaves by basically emasculating them and raping them in front of his family and have other people come over and watch. It was brutal, brutal, ridiculous.
Can I tab on that real quick?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that people realize the long-standing effects of that.
Prison, right?
100%. Not only did they strip us of our heritage, our history, our religion, force us to accept their pagan religion and holidays, language, everything. When you put something like buck breaking into perspective and how they would emasculate us in front of our families and make you not feel like a man and then expect you to go out to that field and still be strong and still be a man.
Yeah.
While you know this happened in front of your family, friends, village, whoever, right? I feel like that still has us in a chokehold with it being expressive, with being emotionally available, with being, with over
compensating
for our masculinity.
Yeah.
While when somebody steps on your shoes in a crowded club where it's bound to happen, instead of being able to talk about it and say, hey, bro, you stepped on my shoes, or we go straight to 10 and we're ready to fight. To overcompensate for that masculinity.
Right.
And I know some people are like, that's a stretch. And after all of these years, well, you do know that the same sharks that used to travel the Northwestern Atlantic slave trade still did that to this day. And that was over 400 years ago. So you mean to tell me like it's not realistic to think that that type of psychological break doesn't still have effect on us today? I think not.
They do that in prison.
And that's probably why
of all the races, you know, who says no homo the most, who says pause the most, you know, like it's like we're super obsessed with not looking manly, you know, and it's I think that it definitely stems from buck breaking and stuff like that. Cause it's and also like, how did they even think of that? That's so wild. Like that the slave masters would be like, That would be like their idea of like, I'm gonna get him.
Good punishment. I know how I'm gonna punish him. I'm gonna rape him in front of his family.
Yeah, like what?
This sickness, man. It's a legit sickness. But the original caucus folks was living with the animals, and like black folk had to teach them to live and to eat and to like. So my first season of the podcast were graphic stories like that, and they were like, that's a little scary. Like let's sort of have a balance in season two. So in season two, I was having some of those stories. But then I was adding stories of greatness, like Gladys Mae West, a black woman that went to a HBCU, who was basically the one that invented GPS, like a black woman that invented GPS type joint. You dig what I'm saying? Like Peter Buxton, the guy who was the whistleblower for the Tuskegee experiment. You dig what I'm saying? Like he was a white man.
Now, I didn't know how long the Tuskegee experiment went until you mentioned that on Zoom in with the homies. Like, I did not know it went as long as it did. Yeah.
Do you know how long it went? 30 years. Might have been 50 years. It was like 1924 to 1974. I think it was 50 years.
Damn.
50 years where they were just giving syphilis to black men in underprivileged neighborhoods and just telling them they were giving them health care. And it was a white man that was like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Like, that ain't right. And that's how the whole shit stopped 50 years
ago. How are they giving them syphilis? Like, through a shot?
I wasn't there, but I have no clue, like, how it was administered. But I know that they were giving them diseases.
That's crazy.
I don't know why.
To that point, though, like, medical, like, there's a book called Medical Apartheid. And, like, there are stereotypes that think that black people have a higher threshold of pain than other races. And black women they're like 3 times to 1. I think it's 3 to 1, 3 to 1 times more likely to die having childbirth than other races because doctors don't take them seriously when they're saying they're in pain. And there are numerous stories about black women dying because they haven't been taken seriously in hospitals and things like that. There are doctors, J. Marion Sims. I'm talking about him on season 4. He's called the godfather of gynecology, but he would perform these surgeries on black women with no anesthesia. Like there's one woman named Anarka. She got 30 surgeries performed on her with no anesthesia. And this man had a fucking statue of him in Central Park that they just tore down in 2018.
That's a mad scientist.
A fucking legit mad scientist.
Legit. What kind of surgeries?
Like gynecological surgeries, however you say that word, but vaginal surgeries, like dealing with their uteruses, like those types of, like you can look those up. Like, so this season is more of a focus on the medical atrocities. I got highlights on HBCUs. The very first black football game was here in my city, and I didn't even realize that. I'm talking about, of course, different winners in those periods. It was a guy named Paul Williams who was the very first black architect out there in LA, and he was an architect in a racist time to the point where he had to master drawing buildings upside down because the racist white people of that time didn't want to sit beside him and see the sketches. So he would sit across from them and draw his shit upside down and was a fucking brilliant genius for it.
Damn.
That's insane, bro.
Imagine how they felt when he was scoring higher than them, though. They're like, the nigga we won't sit with? How is he even doing that?
Wait a minute.
It's like that artist online who be painting upside down and then doing the reveal, like, wow. Here's my
man. On the other podcast I'm on, it's called High in the Sky. We did an episode about chemtrails and contrails, and how the government has finally admitted to doing certain egregious acts on U.S. soil. And one of the things they did was they dropped this bacteria in San Francisco, and they didn't think that. They were doing it to test it for biological warfare, right? Because everybody wants to be on the forefront of the next biggest stick to hit your enemy with. And they thought that it wasn't going to, you know, be harmful to the people. They were basically just trying to see how long it takes to get in, you know, to the ground and how long it stays in the air. So they say, and they didn't even admit to San Francisco what they were doing. They were just, you know, and they did another thing in St. Louis. I'm going to talk about that one in a minute, but people started going to the hospital. One person eventually that died, but when they were going to the hospital and the doctors were doing the tests and running everything, they was like, this bacteria isn't even indigenous to this area. Like, this is from somewhere else in the world. So how the fuck did you ingest this and you haven't traveled? And it was because the government had did this chemtrail. They did one in St. Louis. And I think this might've been in the 50s and 60s. they dropped this, another bacteria, and they did it as a chemtrail type shit. They told the city that they would conduct an experiments to see if they could block a city from the view of planes from the enemies. Like, so if a plane from another country wanted to come over and drop bombs on St. Louis, this is what they were conducting these tests for. And it's just so ridiculous that nobody pushed back, because we didn't have Google at the time. We didn't have internet. We didn't have access to these things. And it's wild that people just accepted this. And it's crazy, bro. Like, the government is wild as hell.
They do all kinds of shit like that. Like, I did last season, I had Massacres Mondays. And I would just talk about different massacres. Like, it was a massacre in East St. Louis in 1917 that I covered. Like days of rising. Like, anytime Black people had any type of success, white folk came through with matches and bad intentions every freaking
Tulsa,
time.
Like, Tulsa, Oklahoma, they burned down Black Wall Street. Like, you think you start doing too well, and you don't want to give us a little bit of that cut. We're gonna set you to sit down. That's every exactly single time.
So I'm excited that this is the fourth season that I'm dropping this joint. And it's every day in February we drop a new episode, and they're like 3-minute episodes, and they digestible enough for you to get some good information, but still do your own homework on them. You dig? So I got 95 episodes already. Jeez. And then after February and March, we're gonna do an expanded version where it's not just Black history facts, it's anything that I didn't know. Maybe you didn't either. Like, I didn't know that Jaleel White auditioned for Rudy on the Cosby Show. Did y'all know that shit? I had no clue. Like, Rudy was a guy character that they was auditioning for, and Jaleel White auditioned for that joint, but then Keisha Knight Pulliam, she damn did so good that damn they had a little little Rudy off. And she won that shit. We expanded it in March, so I'm excited about all of that for sure.
That's dope, man. That's dope. Let the people know where they can find that at, man. They will check that out.
The Black Effect Podcast Network. It's on iHeartRadio. The Black Effect Podcast Network has other podcasts. Jess Hilarious is on there. The 85 South is on there. All the Smoke is on there. You can find I Didn't Know. Maybe you didn't either. We kick off February 1st, 28 episodes, all Black history that I didn't know. Maybe you didn't either. Check that joint out. Yeah. Wherever you get your podcast platforms at.
There it is, man. And go ahead and drop your IG and stuff where people can find you online.
Oh, B.TV, B.DAHT. It's not B the hat, B dot. See, and everybody always asks me, see, the A-H is phonetically ah. That makes the ah sound. So it's B.DAHT and TV.
Why'd you spell it like that?
Because, man, like, I didn't want it to be B dot, like D-O-T. Like, I didn't want it to be, that was too normal. Like, everybody had D-O-T. So I just wanted to do the phonetic spelling with the A-H and made it B dot. And I'm on a Beyonce song, if anybody's interested. Beyonce took my voice and she put it on her song, and but she ain't never paid me for it, but I still love her because my mama was happy about the song.
What song is that?
Before I Let Go.
What was he saying?
At the very beginning of Before I Let Go, you're gonna hear somebody say, "What did he say?" And it goes, "Whoa, whoa," and then "You make me happy." Like, that's legit my voice at the beginning of the Beyonce song.
From where?
I was doing an event at Winston-Salem State, my alma mater, Winston-Salem State. We were hosting something for homecoming, and the DJ played Before I Let Go, and that was just something I do when I'm hosting parties. It was a call and response. So I said, "What'd he say?" And the crowd said, "Whoa, whoa." And she dropped the Netflix special, and I'm just sitting there chilling at the crib, and folks start hitting me like, "Dad, I think I hear your voice on a Beyonce record." And I'm like, "Yeah, right. My voice ain't on no goddamn Beyonce record." And I went to Netflix, and I heard, and I was like, "Yo, that is my voice. Where did that come from?" So social media detectives, they did the digging and they went and found a video that I had on a dormant BDOT page, YouTube page from years ago, hadn't been touched or nothing. The video had like 300 views on it. And Tay Keith,
one of those was Beyonce.
Tay Keith came across that, used it in the song, and next thing you know, I'm on
the What's the song called again?
Fuck him up, man.
It's Before I Let Go. Yeah, Tay Keith, fuck him up. Yeah, fuck him up for real. Fuck him up and don't give no money for this shit. That's Before I Let Go, at the very beginning, you're going to hear, what'd he say?
I just heard it.
Yeah, only one of us on this screen is on a goddamn Beyonce record. Don't you forget it. But all of us got paid the exact same amount.
That's crazy that they knew that was you.
Oh, man. People
they didn't know that was me. That was the thing. Like, I got a phone call from one of my partners, Chris. And Chris is friends with Jay-Z. So Chris calls me. He's like, yo. He's like, is that you on the Beyonce record? And I'm like, yes, man. He's like, my mama said that was you. I'm like, that is me. He's like, yo, that's crazy. Hold on. So he clicked over, and then he three-ways Jay-Z on the phone. And Jay's like, yo, man, we appreciate the record. We appreciate what you brought to the record. We're going to have our lawyers get in contact with you. I was like, this is the best fucking day of my life. Oh, my God. And then the lawyers came with, like, a shitty-ass price. I'm going to share with you. The lawyers said they want to pay me $2,000. I said, $2,000? That's horrible. And I said no to the $2,000 and never got nothing.
So that was the deal. Like, all right, how about you can have $2,000 or go fuck yourself? And you're like,
yo, $2,000, we just take it. Well, just take it. Fight it.
Damn.
We can fight it. Like that. We can fight it.
Jay-Z was like, well, we're not taking it off. So what do we what do we do now? It's out.
Oh man, well listen, man. B-Dot, we appreciate you pulling up, man. Always a great time. Man. Drop some knowledge, drop some laughs, kicked it off, man. I love people that can adjust. I know you know, typically our shows are a little bit more upbeat and stuff like that, but I appreciate you being able to adjust and still add something valuable to the conversation, bro. It's always a treat when players get to meet, man. So we definitely appreciate you pulling up, bro.
Anytime, man. I look forward to much more collabs with y'all, man. Big fan of y'all, the whole fam, man. Everything y'all got going on. I've been watching y'all for a very, very long time, man. No. I love what y'all do.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it. Well, to our folks at home, man, Scary Squad, more of my Pat, what's your people?
Cloudy Village.
Cloudy Village, man. We appreciate y'all tapping in and watching.
Big shout to the dog pound, my dog pound out there.
Gang, okay. And if y'all are watching on Thursday, man, we appreciate y'all as well. As always, guys, I'm to hear more.
I'm Patrick Cloud.
And we'll see you next time on another episode of Damn Internet, You Scary. Peace, guys.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.